Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. I'm here with my co-host, Burl Love. Hi, Burl.
Hi, Sherry.
Good to see you this morning.
Good to see you. Are you excited?
The tail end of Men Wear Pink.
It's a good thing it's the tail end of October. I'm really running out of pink things to wear. Yes. My pink wardrobe has grown a lot, Sherry, over the four years I've been in. And it's so funny when October's over, I take all the pink stuff and I put it in like a dry cleaning bag at the end of the closet where it's, you know, ready
to
go.
And you take it to the dry cleaner, leave it there all year and pick it up before October.
Right. Well, when this episode of the podcast drops, I think October will be over, but we still have a few days to wrap up the Men Wear Pink campaign. So if any listener out there wants to get a last minute donation in to support Men Wear Pink Cincinnati, we will, over the years, this group has raised a lot of money and a lot of awareness, and we're hoping to cross the $2 million threshold.
I see it coming.
Yeah. So, Sherry, I'm going to ask you, beg you, when you do the story for this podcast, to put a link in case people want to hit up the campaign.
Okay.
All right. Yes. Speaking of money, how in the world?
Wait, we didn't say who our guest was
today.
Oh,
yeah. Sorry.
Sometimes we do forget, but I can't forget today's guest. I'm very excited. This was a very, very hard interview to secure because she has a very busy schedule, including being fresh off winning an Olympic gold medal. Today's guest is Rose Lavelle.
Yay.
Midfielder for the women's
national team.
Yes. And so we're going to talk to her about going to Paris and just really her rise to the top. And, of course, all things Cincinnati because she loves to come home and visit her very large family.
Tough interview to get, not just because of her schedule, but Rose just doesn't like to be out there, you know, in the public eye that much other than, you know, being one of
the most recognizable
women's soccer players or soccer player in general in our country. She kind of shies away from interviews and press and media.
Yep.
So she must trust you. She must have, you know, or trust us or something.
So we are going to bring her and let her tell her story in her own voice. Of course, that's the best thing about the podcast
is
hearing from the guests themselves.
That is. All right. But back to where I was going, we were talking about money, and all of a sudden, you wake up one day, and after hearing, you know, during the railroad sale saga about how the city was, you know, could not possibly continue without, you know, finding other revenue sources, all of a sudden, we have a $65 million surplus.
I know. They didn't spend the $65 million last year. And so they're like, ooh, let's spend it. I will say this is Cincinnati City Council. It's called the carryover. This happens every year.
Right.
But the amounts are just so large anymore. It's almost like a budgeting tactic. I'm sorry. Any good budget director does underestimate what the budget's going to come in at. That's how you keep your job.
Right. You don't want to go over.
You don't have
budget.
A shortfall. But that would be terrible or go into the red.
But that kind of, okay. So
$65 million, though.
Speaking as an everyman and not a City Hall insider like you, I would first say, okay, what didn't they fund that they should have funded? You know, who got shortchanged?
Well, I have to tell you, since the story actually ran, the real vote is today, of course, after we're recording, but it has gone through budget committee. There's a lot of things that weren't funded, but that doesn't necessarily, like the Cincinnati Fire Department came in and they have massive fleet issues. The fire trucks are completely out of life service and there's a lot of issues. The city is short ambulances. Like if an ambulance is like, you know, out of like breaks down, right? Like
right,
if you're thinking like cars.
There's not a lot of backup.
There's no backup.
Yeah.
There's no backup. And there's $400 million in deferred maintenance. Stop me if you've heard that before somewhere.
Deferred maintenance. I'm having flashbacks to railroads.
That is what we heard.
Railroad Palooza.
No mention of that. So this $65 million is all new things.
That's the part I don't understand. Help me understand if we have things that should be funded, like they're already in the budget, they're essential public services. Why all of a sudden are we like, oh, we have $65 million. Let's come up with new things to spend it on. Why wouldn't you drive that back into things like fire, things like
Well, this is the people.
Deferred maintenance.
This is what the city elected. They elected people to make these decisions for them. There was no public discussion. These things were put forward. There was no FYI memo. There was no public hearing. Now, I mentioned that in the story, and I will say both Vice Mayor Jan Michelle McCurney, last week's guest, she was so great, and
get her on the phone right now.
Jeff Cramerding, the head of the budget committee, they both said in the future when we have such a large pot of money, we probably should have public hearings to hear from the citizens. This was just honestly...
Why doesn't the city manager have a list of priorities to say, these are already things as a city we're committed to spending money on? And so...
Some of it is that. It's $5.5 million for affordable housing. Like that city has said we're committed to that. Right. That's a lot of money to put towards the Affordable Housing Trust Fund.
What about expanding the payroll for fire and police?
That did not come up. That does not.
That shocks
well,
me.
Well, a lot of this is the raises, of course.
Whatever.
So there was $66 million in raises. So a lot of this money is going to cover that.
Okay.
Those raises, they knew going in, they only budgeted like 2% raises, and the raises were much more than that, because if you want to have any workers, you have to not give them 2% raises if you're a police or fireman in 2024.
What has been the response to, and I'm going to broadly summarize this, but paying criminals not to get in trouble again?
So this is all of this spending kind of came out of nowhere. It's just kind of a list. We're going to vote on it this week over the last couple weeks.
Yeah.
But on Monday, they brought forward a program called Advance Peace. And this is being done in 11 cities, which the person who started it in Richmond, California, said it's very successful. I don't have a reason to doubt him, but he's just saying this. The Justice Department is willing to take a look at it. They put $2 million into like a very serious like university study of whether this program works. But the person who's in charge of it came to Cincinnati last year and is like, you guys should do this. And Vice Mayor Jan Michelle Lynn McCurney again said, we should do this. And she's putting $275,000 from this into this program. And it pays people who are living the violent life and identified as people who are involved in violence in Cincinnati, pays them a stipend and gives them a mentor as an incentive to behave.
And they're hoping, according to your story, to reduce violent crime, gun-related crimes in the city by 10%?
Yes.
If the program is successful?
Yes. And I will say it's also a program. Two things kind of came out of the reporting of it. First of all, the people involved in... Well, there has to be all kind of matching funds. $275,000 is not going to get the city anywhere.
Right.
You know, but it's like startup money. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the goal of it anyway. There has to be a lot of private money raised too. But the people are allowed to remain anonymous. And so you do look at that and you say, well, how do you know if the program worked? If they're anonymous, then you don't know if they committed crime again. Because then they say that's for safety. But the other prong of this program is that it operates outside of the Cincinnati Police Department, because they say that is how they really can gain trust with the criminals, that they're not really police involved. They don't have anything to do with the police department. And the FOP president was really, really taken aback by that. He's like, we have worked very hard in this city to build trust with citizens and get them to talk to us. And we have come so far. And he feels like that we're in a much better place than we were even 5 years ago. And he's like, we're having a program that operates outside of us. He's not happy. He's very skeptical of the idea. So it's not something that's done in tandem with the police department.
All right. Well, before we bring on Rose Lavelle, let's shift very quickly to the latest development with Paycor Stadium.
Scott Wortman walked by yesterday with his laptop in hand, and here it is.
His newly repaired laptop.
Oh.
Don't you remember you had to loan him your laptop?
Oh, because, I did have that.
It just decided not to work.
There was a little bit of a meltdown during.
Yes.
Wait, you guys, Scott and I were going through line by line. It's honestly, it's really it's not okay in 2024. The campaign finance reports are not a searchable database for the local races. They can if they want to, but they don't, and it's on purpose. They want to hide, you know, donors and money.
Right.
And we are talking about like $3 million of money between the two candidates, and Scott and I were in the midst of going line by line.
And it's confusing.
No, for the prosecutor's
for the
race.
Prosecutor's race.
And his computer died.
Yeah. Well, that's why we do the hard work, folks. Somebody's got to dive through those campaign finance reports and follow the money.
So much math between that story and the $65 million. You know, that didn't really come up in a really understandable breakdown way. I did that in tandem with the counsel aide. He and I really did a very succinct breakdown. You can find it on Cincinnati.com of really where every dollar was going, because it was just parceled out in different ways, mm-hmm. and it didn't add up in memos that were sent out to council members. So we did a lot of math, and thank you to that aide who helped me, because I was like, it's not adding up.
Well, back to Scott, who has been working.
Well,
and covering, you know, anything and everything happening with the beginnings of the negotiations for a new lease with the stadium, the, you know, repairs, remodeling, all the things. You know, we've already seen conceptual drawings.
We've been
What's that? Of the stadium.
The redo itself and the practice facility.
And new offices and a practice facility, which stick a pin in that. We'll go back to that really quickly. And then one of our favorite elected officials, Alicia Reese, said, well, has anybody considered a dome? And asked for an estimate of how much it would cost to actually put some sort of cover as part of this process.
So they did a study for $139,000.
$139,000 study to basically determine it would cost an additional $1 billion with a B dollars.
Which we already knew. The numbers are out there for other stadiums and domes. This number was not a shocker.
Right.
Number.
But not a shocker. But now we actually, you know, we have looked at it with the, you know, with our stadium specifically, and everybody pretty much was like, yeah, no, that's way too expensive. Not even like non-starter. That's
so
what? Okay.
The rendering is, I have to tell you, the rendering is gorgeous.
Of course.
You know what, though?
Have you ever seen an ugly rendering?
I know. I mean, I'm actually very happy with the final rendering of the convention center, but the first rendering of the convention center with these giant arches was so phenomenal and gorgeous. But of course, when you actually get down to the money, but the new, it's going to look so much better and just fit into the city landscape. But anyway, renderings, of course, are beautiful. It seems to have an extra skyscraper in there too. And speaking of past guests, my joke all day yesterday was like, I think that's the second tower that John Barrett said that he has conceptual plans of in his office. And I was like, is that the second tower? And that's just a joke. But
right.
So it has like funny buildings in the background of it, but it doesn't just because of the way our stadium is built, like you'd have to rebuild the whole stadium to actually put a dome on top of it that closes and opens like a sunroof.
Right.
It does not work. So basically it's like some sort of like ski slope. It's hard to describe structure that goes over the stadium in like, and slopes down on both sides in a very wide swath. It is very pretty, but it's at complete odds with the rest of the renderings that we saw of what the stadium would do would be like, because it would go over where the practice facility is. And it seems to go over where the banks, the next part of the building of the banks would be. So it's a lot.
Well, I'm going to make a bold prediction here.
Okay.
And you know, maybe I'll be proven wrong, but if anybody wants to see what that looks like, a dome over top of Paycor Stadium, go to Cincinnati.com, look at the rendering, and that rendering is the only time you will ever see a dome.
But they already voted it down.
Right.
They rolled it out at a meeting, and Denise and Stephanie both said no. To be fair to Alicia Reese, These are things we know. This has been talked about a lot, but a lot of citizens have brought this to her. And I've myself heard this in the community. Why don't we just dome this? And people, right. it's such a nuance.
Idea. Yeah.
This is a definitive thing that people can be like, look, we really did study it. We really did see what this could be like and not just dismiss it and be like, oh, trust me, that's $1 billion. This is a hard, definitive thing. And so Alicia was listening to people when they were talking about it. Why not dome it? This is the answer.
There's your answer. And it's not out of the question because we don't really have an arena that works in the current era of events, right? What's now
known as Heritage Bank. The arena study was TikTok, you know, any minute.
We put the dome on the stadium, and that gives more options for events at the stadium, makes it a little more weather, you know, friendly. And so it was sort of like, well, we're talking about building a new arena. What if we put a roof over top of Paycor?
It doesn't work.
Yeah. We still need the arena.
Now, Alicia did make a good point about when she was first talking about the dome a couple of weeks ago, very openly and publicly, and like the studies coming and everything. Alicia did say, should the stadium fund be expanded? Like, ask the voter, should it be allocated differently going forward, maybe to include an arena? And that led to a discussion of, could this also be an arena? Mm-hmm. That seems to, we're leaving that on the cutting room floor. Mm-hmm. But then it's like, how are we going to pay for an arena? And I'm not kidding. The arena study's coming. Seems to me like they're probably just like, oh, there's an election and we maybe don't want to roll it out during a very busy time, but it's coming.
I'm sure it's done.
That's what I heard at City Hall, but no one has a copy of it.
All right. Well, if anyone's going to get a copy of it,
they know better. They know better. It's emanating out of the chamber. They know better than to drop off actual copies of things. Right. They just kind of shop things around. I'm not saying that happened, but maybe I heard some things.
All right. I feel like we should have some soap opera music queued up every time we talk about this stadium and, you know, as the stadium turns or something like that.
Oh, my gosh.
And like some,
it's
you
done.
Know, some
it's
old
a new
organ
series.
Music. Like,
it's a new series.
Another episode of As the Stadium Talks Turn. All right. Well, let's bring on our special guest, shall we?
Yes.
All right.
Special guest, I'm here on That's So Cincinnati. I'm super excited to welcome, well, superstar Rose Lavelle. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So today we record in person, but you are very busy training. And so where are you today?
I'm in Nashville right now. We have a game tomorrow against Iceland, and then we'll be traveling to Louisville right after.
Okay, that is a very busy weekend. Thank you for squeezing us in. Yes. And so you grew up in Cincinnati. So let's talk a little bit about that. Although in past Inquirer interviews, I know we have talked about it, but you're a very Cincinnati girl. And so I love that. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Cincinnati, went to Mount Notre Dame. All of my family's still in Cincinnati. I come from a really big family. My mom's one of 12. So I have like 30 plus cousins and everybody's in Cincinnati. So one of the reasons why like Cincinnati is so special to me is because that's where all the people I love are.
So you sounds like you have a lot of like first cousins.
Yeah, so many.
Did you know from a young age that soccer was it for you?
Yeah, I do feel like it's like so weird to think of. Cause like truly the second I like found out about the U.S. Women's National Team, it was like, they were immediately my idols and I just wanted to be like them someday. And I feel like that happened for me in like second or third grade. And it was just like, that was the path I wanted for myself. And it's always so weird that it's like actually happened.
So in second or third grade, because we're very much in the era of women's soccer and little girls playing soccer have so many people to look up to now, including you. You achieved your dream at a very young age. And we're in the Caitlin Clark era. And back then, what was it like looking for a female star in sports to mirror what your dream was going to be?
I always say like the big moment for me was when the national team had come and played at Paul Brown Stadium, now Paycor. Yeah, they played at Paul Brown Stadium. I think it was 2003. And just getting to see them in person, like, made it so much more real for me. And it just, like, I think since then I was like, oh my gosh, I want to be just like them. I want to be in their shoes one day. And I just, like, looked up to them so much. So I feel like for me, like, I found my, like, inspiration and my motivation through that, like, 99er team with Mia Hamm, Christine Lilly, Julie Foudy. And I think it's cool because I feel like I always say, I think it's kind of come full circle. And now I'm able to give back to the sport in the same way it gave to me by now, like, kind of being that role model for younger players coming up.
And first, you have gotten to play, right, with some of your role models.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think it was really cool. I feel like I came on the national team at a really cool time when there was this, like, kind of younger group coming in, like my age cohort, and then still a really talented veteran group that I grew up watching. And I think it was so cool because it's, like, truly, like, your role models all of a sudden become your teammates, and then they all of a sudden they become your friends. And I feel like it was so special to be able to, like, my first couple years on the team, like, learn and grow from them. Yeah, it's something I'm really, really grateful for.
So would you say your first big, what year did you join the league?
2017.
Okay. Well, then within 2 years, you're in the World Cup. Is that right?
Yeah.
And so talk to me a little bit, like, I mean, you scored goals then, and what that was like for your life.
I mean, I always say, I think I always thought that, like, you know, like, after winning the World Cup, it's like you, like, achieve something so big, and it's this, like, kind of monumental moment in your life. I think I thought I would feel some type of different. But I didn't. Like, I just kind of still felt like just me. So I think, like, I don't know. I don't think it really, like, changed much for me. I think it was really, really cool and special. And I think maybe if it motivated me to, like, keep wanting to experience that kind of feeling of, like, winning something so big with your team. Yeah.
And pretty quick, it was the 2020 Olympics right after that.
Yeah. It ended up getting pushed back to 2021.
Oh, COVID. Right.
Yeah.
My COVID time is very blurry.
Yeah.
Do you ever get downtime? Because I know from watching FC Cincinnati, like, the soccer season is so long and there's so many different parts of it. It doesn't seem like there's off time ever.
Yeah. I mean, I think we get, like, an off season that's a couple weeks long. But yeah, I mean, it's like go, go, go. But I think that's the life we signed up for. It doesn't mean we don't get tired sometimes. But yeah, I think it's like you take the good with the bad. And I think it's I get to, like, kind of live out my dream and have this, like, amazing fun career where I'm getting to play with incredible players, but also play with incredible people too. And, like, the connections you build, it's just something so special. So yeah, I think it's like, we don't get a lot of break, but I think there's still, like, so much good that it's kind of like you take the good with the bad. Yeah.
So you're fresh off of Paris.
Mm-hmm.
Winning there. What was the trip to Paris like in the Paris Olympics?
It was fun. Yeah, it was really fun. I think we obviously went in with a new coaching staff. We only got one camp with Emma before heading to the Olympics. And I think just in that short amount of time, we, like, grew and learned so much from the coaching staff. And I think I just said this, that like, I think no matter what happened at the Olympics, it was always going to be the start of something, not the end of something. I think a lot of times when you go into those tournaments, it's like years in the making and years of building up to that. And then a lot of times when, like, whether you win or lose, it's like it's the end of that cycle. Like, people are in and out of that environment. And I think it just felt like no matter what at the Olympics, this was like the starting point for us. And it was the starting point of a really exciting new chapter for this team. And I think it like kind of like allowed us to like kind of like be excited and play freely. And I think that's like a credit to the coaching staff and how they have approached this whole moment and how they've like prepared us for that moment. But that was a long-winded answer, but it was fun.
It's a podcast. That's the whole point. So does she say, it seems like she has some sort of secret sauce. Like she brought some sort of magic to talented players. Like, can you kind of describe what that was?
Yeah. I mean, I think first and foremost, like tactically, she's like incredible. She knows the game in and out. So I think that in itself, it's like it sets us up and we're like really prepared going into every game. And then I think she like kind of gave us like the go ahead to like enjoy ourselves and have fun and like truly like just be ourselves and enjoy the moment. And I think like when you have a coach that's like giving you that green light, I think it like made us all play like so much more freely. And I think so much more fun. I think you saw that at the Olympics, like we truly enjoyed ourselves. We enjoyed each other. Like we loved what we were doing and we loved who we were doing it with.
Did you get to meet any of like the Olympic superstars that we kind of all like the break? I mean, this Olympics was like the social media Olympics, like where we met, you know, some really people had big breakout moments. Did you get to meet any of the men's gymnastics team? Anybody who break dances?
The soccer part of the Olympics is a little different because we're traveling like city to city for each game. So we're not in the Olympic Village the whole time. We're like staying in hotels and traveling. So we weren't like in the middle of all of that. But obviously it's the Olympics and you're like watching and we're cheering on everybody. So it still was like really cool and special, but we didn't really get to like overlap with anybody.
Okay. So Snoop Dogg wasn't in the audience. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. Maybe he was at some, I don't know.
Speaking of breakout stars from the Olympics.
Yeah.
which you didn't see coming. Where do you keep your gold medal?
It's at my parents' house.
Okay.
Yeah. So in Cincinnati.
All right. So you get to come and visit it. Is that right? And then they invite people over to see it.
Yeah. I just am like, I know that's where I'll never lose it. So they'll keep track of it.
All right. And you leave it behind in a hotel room. Not the best idea.
Yeah, exactly.
So Cincinnati is in the running for a national women's soccer team. Mm-hmm. Fingers crossed. The rumor is that we had people come and visit during blank. What would that mean for Cincinnati if we win that?
I mean, I have like always been saying, I think Cincinnati is like such an underrated soccer city. I think you see that with like how the city has like galvanized around FCC. But I also think in terms of just talent, like in the NWSL, there are so many people, there's so many girls from Cincinnati playing in the league. And so I would just love for Cincinnati to be able to like continue to showcase that talent. And I think in this, like, as well, it's like you can be what you can see. So I think having like a women's team in Cincinnati, I think it's like that much more inspiring for younger kids who get to like watch these players in their own backyard and like see that every day. Cause I'm like, I had one moment where the national team came to Cincinnati and how huge that was for me. But if somebody's getting to see that every single day, what that can do for them. So Yeah. I mean, I think I like love Cincinnati with my whole heart. So that would be like so amazing.
I know. And I should point out, even though you guys can't see her, it's the best thing about the podcast that we never really have to get ready. she's wearing a Xavier sweatshirt. You're a big fan, right?
Huge Xavier fan, born and raised.
So you have been obviously to so many soccer cities. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much you get to see of them. You're probably in and out a lot, but why, if you could tell the people picking cities right now in a crisp like sentence, why should they pick Cincinnati?
Oh gosh. I really think that like Cincinnati, people just have so much pride in where they're from. And I know it would be a market that is going to show up for the team and like show support. And I think it's like just going to be just an amazing market for women's sports and to like showcase the talent within the city and the people within the city and what kind of community is there. I think it would be so special. I think what FCC has been able to do in their like short time as an MLS team has been so incredible. And I really think that is in the cards for a women's team too, if they get the bid.
Can you envision yourself ever? We're super hopeful here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. We love our city too. So let's pretend we're getting one. Would you ever be able to come and play here, do you think?
Yeah, at some point I would like love to come play for Cincinnati. I am currently playing for Gotham in New Jersey, New York, and I'm very happy there. But I would love to at some point in my career play for my hometown.
And so you have had a couple of times where you've been able to come and play at first at Nippert, right? And then in TQL.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was that like? We pack it in. I've been in the Bailey. I've been in every kind of seat in that stadium. We pack it in.
Yeah. I mean, every time I get to come home and play in Cincinnati, it's so special. I think when we first played at Nipper, it was so special because I didn't even really like know that it was a possibility to play in Cincinnati in my hometown. And I think, I feel like I am who I am because of Cincinnati and like the people there. So I think to be able to like come back and play in front of the people who have like made me who I am today, was just so special.
When you say they made you who you are, had a little bit, like how so?
I just think like it's like you are who you surround yourself with. And I think I have so much family and friends in Cincinnati. I still go back to MND all the time. I work out there in the off season. I like go and talk with my teachers, and I just think it's like such a special community that really like uplifts everybody. And I think it's like a credit to them for supporting me in this like crazy life I've been living. But I think they gave me so much like confidence and belief and support in what I wanted to do. But then at the same time have always showed me like so much love and support, regardless of how I'm doing in this career. I know that I can always go back home and I'm not going to be the soccer player. I'm going to be Rose. And I think like having that part too has been so important.
Well, I can't let you go without asking you about Wilma. We are recording and it's a weekend, and so I'm recording from home. And so Rose just saw Charlie pop his head.
Oh my God, I wasn't sure. I have you like,
I tried to put him away, but I was like, he's going to be louder if I do that than if I let him sit on. So tell us about your dog, because it hasn't, I mean, Wilma has her own whole social media presence.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Wilma is a 12-year-old English bulldog. We got her when I was a senior in high school. And she's just like literally the cutest thing ever. She is so fit and spelt. She's like such an inspiration, and she just like, she's so cute. She's the best thing ever.
All right. She has a longer name than Wilma, right?
Wilma Jean Wrinkles. Yes.
Okay. Is that her official name? Or because my Charlie, we call Charlie like 1,000 different names. Is that her official name?
No, yeah. Wilma Jean Wrinkles is her government name.
Okay. And they do. They have government names that have to get registered. Yes, we have a million nicknames. Do you get is she with you when you travel at all? Or do you miss her?
No. So a common misconception is I am not Wilma's mother. She is my sister.
Okay.
So she lives with her parents in Cincinnati still.
And that checks out. When my son goes to school, it's going to be a little interesting because he's my dog and they're brothers. But I don't know what that's going to look like. So when you come back, we always ask this question right at the end. When you come back to Cincinnati, what are your favorite things to do?
Oh my gosh. Literally it's like clockwork. Every time I'm in Cincinnati, my first meal is like we get home and then one of my parents is going out and getting Skyline.
All right. What's your go-to there?
I always get 3 cheese conies with everything. Okay.
With
mustard,
everything.
Onion. Yeah.
That is very Cincinnati of you.
It's so good.
That throws newcomers. They'll try it and then they're like, wait, mustard and onions too? Uh-huh.
Yeah. I just trust it.
And that should be their motto. Just trust it.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
I'm super excited. Are you coming back to play anytime soon?
In Cincinnati?
Yes.
I don't know. Hopefully. Okay.
Hopefully. All right. Well, thanks so much.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Well, we are definitely going to let Rose get back to her busy training schedule, but I just love talking about Cincinnati and when people go away and the things they love about coming back. And so, all right. So, and now we know where her gold medal is at her parents' house. I agree. She's on the road all the time. She doesn't want to lose it. So that was probably a really good decision to keep it at home and she can visit it.
I would be wearing it all the time.
I know.
Like I would just be walking around my daily life with my medal on.
It's probably pretty heavy though and would slow her down on the field.
Yeah. I was talking to somebody about the Olympics and, you know, how special it is to get a gold medal and how it changes who you are because for the rest of your life, you are Olympic gold medalist.
She said she doesn't really feel different too much, but it does.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Like,
it's one of those things.
Even in like the lead of the story, it's Olympic gold medalist. It does change things.
Right. Okay. So, Sherry, we had a mega, mega, mega Cincinnati moment last week.
We did.
That I think we should wrap up the show with. We celebrated the 2024 class of the Enquirer Women of the Year, a tradition that's been going on 60 years. You know, if you look back at past honorees, it's a who's who of women who have made the city, the community, a better place through their largely philanthropy. We kind of separate from the YWCA Awards, which is more business-oriented. This is truly, you know, some are big business leaders.
But it's for their philanthropic growth.
Can you say that
word,
Sherry?
No, I can't. Philanthropic.
It's for their philanthropic efforts. Uh-huh. And so I'll run down the list. Jeanette Altano, past guest on the podcast. Robin Burrow, past guest on the podcast. Julie Grady Hurd, Julie Richardson. Keatsy Tariba Sansalone, who I have known for years because we both go to the same church. Lisa Sauer. Former guest of the podcast. She came in to talk about her leadership of the campaign for Arts Wave, which we learned at the luncheon broke all records this year under her leadership. Another podcast guest. This is a theme. We should like.
Oh, it's true.
Kristen Irwin Schlottman, who is running Film Cincinnati.
Past
Kim
guest.
Sims, Barbara Turner, and Pam Weber. Kim Sims. If you don't know that name, you have probably heard of the Book Bus Lady.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I mean, what a story. A retired teacher who said, you know what? We need to deal with access to books and encourage the passion and love of reading. And what if we got a bus and filled it with books and go around our community. This is basically on the west side, Oak Hills School District. And what a great story she had. And then, of course, the room was brought down because at the end of her, we do these videos so each woman can kind of speak in her own words about what drives them and then also hear comments from other people. And as a surprise to most people in the room, the end of her video featured her daughter, who's deployed overseas in the military, thanking her mom. And there was some
such great moments.
Not a dry eye in the room. We had it at the Hard Rock, which was a fun place to have this event.
But that's because you guys, like a lot of events in downtown Cincinnati, were used to be at the casino.
Right.
Now, Women of the Year has been like kind of all
used to be at
over
the convention center.
But it has
not
been.
Not the casino, at the convention center.
Right.
So the casino is getting a lot of.
I
think
a whole kind of redo. I think they saw it coming.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, just a great event honoring some amazing women in our community. And, you know, when I am at events like Women of the Year and Great Living Cincinnatians, I always leave with this like sense of inadequate, you know, like I'm inadequate because I haven't, like, my gosh, these are busy people and they find so much time to give back. And like, what have I done? Like, I think that's the inspiration.
You've
like
raised a lot of money for Real Men
Wear
Pink.
I mean, but like, this is a whole nother level. I mean, what some of these women have accomplished. So it was just a fun celebration of not just these women, but Cincinnati in general, because the various causes that they have supported, you get a strong, and all of them talked about their involvement, was many times, started with a desire to be connected to the community and the love they have of the community because of participating, in the groups that they support, whether it's the ballet, whether it's Film Cincinnati, whether it's Arts Wave, whether it's, you know, the book bus, right?
Yeah.
And I'm very excited, Sherry, because I asked Kim Sims, all right, this is another That's a Cincinnati moment. My parents were in town this weekend, and we decided to take them to Prima Vista.
Oh.
So we could have a nice Italian dinner overlooking the river.
Did you go Saturday or Sunday?
We went Friday.
Okay.
Okay, and so this is great. We're walk in, we're waiting for our table, and Kim Sims and her family walks in. And she recognizes me and she was like, oh my gosh, they had seen me at the luncheon and everything. So they were still like kind of basking in the glory of the luncheon. And, so that was fun. And then as we were leaving the restaurant, guess who was having dinner there?
Ooh.
Buddy LaRosa.
I was just going to guess that. I
Buddy
just said
LaRosa.
It so and we so go there like, on Sundays like, a lot and we see, there's no time I don't see someone I know.
Yeah. So I was like, Mom, you know this is a good Italian restaurant if Buddy LaRosa himself eats here. And so that was kind of fun.
Did you
too.
Bother him to take a picture?
Hell no.
Everyone does, and he always does it.
I know, and he's so gracious and so kind. But it's like, he's with, you know, having dinner. We didn't want to like.
He lives right by there.
Yeah.
He's a regular.
Well, I asked the hostess, I said, how often is he in here? And she's like, oh, about once a week.
Yeah.
So if you want to see Buddy LaRosa and a great view of the city looking east from the west side down the river, Prima Vista.
Which I will say has come to my attention. The convention center redo is very much in progress.
Yeah.
But the lighted panels are still up with the Cincinnati sign.
Yes.
And so it'll be interesting. I think that the jury's still out about whether that stays up with the redo and everything, but it's up now and still very much in use with all the different changing colors. FC Cincinnati won their playoff game. It was orange and blue the other night. I was leaving work very late and I noticed.
Well, it has been pink. It has been multicolored for Blink. It has been orange.
Yep.
We're not really celebrating anything orange these days, are we? Other than like pumpkins and whether orange and
black. The trees are beautiful, Burl.
Oh, the trees are beautiful. Things aren't
Leave
so beautiful.
It at that.
Yeah, with the men in orange and black or white. Anyway.
Not a fan of the white uniforms.
All right. Well,
that's a different conversation.
Sherry, should we wrap this up?
Yes.
All right. We thank you for listening to this week's episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast, a production of The Enquirer and Cincinnati.com.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a rating and share it with a friend who loves all things Cincinnati.
Finally, if you value local journalism, and I know you do, and haven't subscribed for full digital access to Cincinnati.com, now's a great time. Just go to Cincinnati.com and click on the subscribe button to see a special offer just for you.
Thanks again. See you next week.